columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
When you look out at the Broncos, and when you look out at the defense in 2020, there could be something very different about Von Miller that may make you do a double take.
Oh!
You know what I'm talking about here?
No, I don't. I'm interested to hear.
Von Miller on Saturday on Twitter.
I saw a picture of him.
Well, he put up a poll.
Oh, he put up a poll. Did you see the picture of Von?
No, what was the picture?
I saw a picture on social media that he posted. He was on a, I don't know, it was a cool looking, I don't know, it was like a van, but it was really a cool one, as you would expect, and he was kind of on top of it with his shirt off. And so he had two different pictures. He looked in great shape. I mean, Von always looks in great shape, but he looked in great shape. So I thought you might have been talking about that, but sorry.
I'm just actually seeing that picture now.
Yeah? It's like a Mercedes kind of van something. Is that right?
Yeah, it's like it looks like one of these Sprinter vans that are becoming more and more popular.
Sprinter?
Yeah, they're called like Sprinter vans where they're basically, they're not built for like attraction. They're, they're not meant to look sexy. They're more of a, serving a purpose of like functionality. So you can like gut them, there's space in there. You can like put, you know, if you want to travel across the country, you can build them a certain type of way. And actually, I know a guy who has done this, like bought a Sprinter van and, you know, just.
It's kind of that matte black though, right? Isn't that the color?
Yes.
Thing? I mean, it's a good looking one.
It is a good looking one for a Sprinter van. So if you like camping or traveling and, you know, you're into that type of stuff, those have become, you know, more popular.
I grew up with a van.
Did you?
Yeah, a big one. So, you know, like one where you could put like you have a card table in the middle, the swivel chairs, and the back would come down to be like a bed, right?
Oh, whoa.
Like one of those, because we used to take, so we always would have one, and we used to take trips, you know, from Clemson to Louisiana for the whole summer and stuff like that. And so that's what we would drive, but we always had one of those, and then it got stolen in the grocery store parking lot and lit on fire, and I think that was the last one we bought. That was
wait a second.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No, I remember it. I had to be second, third grade. I just remember,
someone, you know, stole your guy's van?
Yeah, from the grocery store parking lot. And, next thing you know, they found it that evening or whatever, and they just torched it, right? I guess, I don't know. They didn't want their fingerprints or whatever.
Yeah.
No, they just torched it. So there went the van. So that wasn't a fun night.
Oh my goodness.
I wasn't very happy.
So you had one of these diesel vans. Like,
yes.
I remember, like, there used to be a family that had one in church. It was like a Mark III. It was just a massive, massive van.
Had the big tire on the back, and
you always had
something painted on it. Yeah, we ended up buying another one, and, cause we had it in Louisiana for a while. So we ended up
buying
another one.
So how did they get and I'm just fascinated by this new story here. How did they get the van were keys left in the van?
I don't know. I don't remember the whole story. But, you know, my mom, she was the one that predominantly drove it during the day. My dad had a dealer car. So I don't remember if she just left the keys in there or if they hotwired it or what happened. But it got stolen out of the grocery store parking lot and lit on fire.
That had to have been a pretty traumatic experience for you being 7, 8 years old.
Well, I mean, I had a lot of traumatic stuff going on, but that wasn't at the top of the list at that point. So it kind of like didn't really know what was going on. Like, oh, our van got stolen. But I wasn't with my mom at the grocery store. I wasn't there.
They torched it.
Yeah, they torched the thing.
Even Brandon Allen is sympathetic.
Look at you. You've been on it, man. You've been on it. Oh, my God. You have been on it. That is good stuff. Because he was one from Arkansas in high school.
Yeah.
In high school, right?
High school. It was either high school or when he was at Arkansas.
One of the other. I thought it might have been high school where they torched his car.
It could have been. They torched his truck.
Yeah.
My goodness. All right. So I didn't know that that happened. I'm sorry that that happened to you guys.
It's fine. It's okay.
So back to Von Miller. He put up a poll.
How did we get down that road?
No. He put up a poll on Twitter on Saturday asking if he should change his number from 58 back to number 40, the number he wore at DeSoto High School down in Texas, the number he wore at Texas A&M before coming to the NFL in 2011. At the time, and this is incredibly noteworthy, at the time, Von Miller could not wear the number 40 because the NFL back then had rules that like forbade linebackers from wearing numbers in the 40s. So 40 through 49, you couldn't wear it. So he selected 58 as a way to tip the cap and honor Derek Thomas.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
And but then 4 years later, 4 or 5 years later, after he came in the league, the competition committee changed the uniform number regulations that allow linebackers to wear numbers now in their 40s. So he put up the poll with a picture of him in his A&M uniform and him in a Broncos uniform when he's first drafted wearing number 40. And he said, should I do this? What do you think?
Yes.
He should do it.
I say yes. Yep. It's time to put the old Von Miller to rest, and let's see a new Von Miller. And let's have a great run here with the number 40 on. And maybe it'll kickstart something or whatever it might do to hopefully get the best out of Von now in his 30s, and hopefully he'll be around here for the next 5 or 6 years. And so switch it up a little bit, change it up, do something a little bit different, and because this is a big year. This is a big year, and I think it would be kind of cool to kind of start that next chapter hopefully here because he did have one of his worst years of his career here last year, and I think it's time to kind of close the number 58 one. And let's unveil a new one and start something new here. Start a new legacy here with Von Miller number 40.
Well, I'll say this. If Von Miller went out and had 15 sacks this past year, I don't think he would be doing this. I think that he is totally hitting the reset button on his career. And, we've seen other players do this. He would not be the first, for whatever someone's going through in their life, the need to change their number. I remember Derek Fisher, the basketball player, near the end of his career. He was 37 years old, and he was number 2 forever. And he changed his number to 37 as a statement that, yes, I am 37, and I am still in this league.
And then nobody noticed. And he's like, hey, guys, I changed my number this year. Okay, I changed it. You don't see it?
Matt Barnes was the only one that noticed.
Oh, look at you. I was about to throw a Matt Barnes joke in there, but I went with that one instead. I was about to throw one in there. Goodness, that was a good one.
So it's signifying a shift in something in your life. Kobe Bryant, that was the greatest jersey change of all time, where he had a Hall of Fame career stacked up in number 8, and he said, I'm going with number 24, smack dab in the middle of his career, and you could literally, and I've divided it and looked at both sides of it, there are literally two different Hall of Fame careers, which is why you and I both agree
you
that 8
need
and 24 needs
you
to go
need
up
to
in the in the Staples
no, I
Center.
Disagree with that.
We're on the same page with that. So
why did he do it? He wanted to sell more jerseys?
No, he wanted to
is
do, I
was?
Think it was like, I want to be one more than Jordan. I want a one-up Mike. He's 23, okay. I'm 24. That's my layman's interpretation of
it. Sure.
But we've seen guys, Deion Sanders, change his number during his career. Michael Jordan changed his number to 45, then go back to 23. Shaq changed his number from 32 to 34. Randy Moss changed his number. LeBron changed his number, 23
to 6. Some of these guys are changing teams.
That's true.
Brandon Stokley changed his number, right? You have that on the rundown, too?
Well, they change your number because they said, who's that? They just threw you a penny, and whatever number was on the penny, which is the...
I knew I shouldn't have said anything.
All right.
No, but some of those guys, they're changing teams, they changed numbers. How many stayed with their team? You're talking about like Kobe with his team, just changed it from 1 year to the next. How many guys, did that? So you look at Von making that type of move. Obviously, that's a big move. You got a lot of 58s out there. What would they think of it? But I think it would be good. Like, hey, you know, Vaughn this year, he skipped his Australia trip, right? He's like, nope, not doing it. Putting that on the back burner. I need to go to San Fran. I need to get back to the grind. He knows what's at stake here. And I know it's a silly jersey. It is what it is. But sometimes, you know what? You just put that thing on, and I don't know. And it just does something for you. And so if that would be the case with Vaughn, I'm for it. Switch that thing up. Change it up, because this is a big year for you. And you're right. I think he realizes and knows how important this year is, and that's why he's kind of bringing that up.
Yeah. Yep, interesting. Very interesting. We'll see what happens. Almost 74% of the poll said keep 58. So we'll see. But if anyone is going to do something like this, it's Vaughn. You know, he's just a little bit.
I don't mind it. What do you think? Like, I mean, do you mind it? What do you think?
Whatever makes him feel comfortable in a year that is so important, that's what I want him to do. If no, changing his number to number 40 has some subliminal spark underneath his rear end, then change your number, bro. It's just a number. We'll get used to 40. Well, you know, as long as you get in the backfield, I'm with whatever.
Driving on the piles again in high school. Remember, I'm sure he was doing that. College, if that gets you back to doing that, then I'm for it.
Speaking of the Broncos defense, the 2015 Broncos defense getting major props, and I mean major props. Tell you from who next. Hey, real quick, we're talking about Von Miller changing his jersey number from 58 to 40. Or potentially changing his number. He put out a poll on Twitter asking if he should. There's a lot of folks, I shouldn't say a lot, but a handful of folks who did check in on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, saying, like, are you kidding me? I bought two or three Von Miller jerseys with the number 58. You know, it would be unfair to us if he was with the same team and changed his number.
Yeah, look, I mean, I figured that you would have a lot of that for people that have the jerseys. It kind of is what it is. We all know Vaughn at 58. If you want to keep it, then keep it. If you want to buy another one, buy another one. I you know, just because he's not wearing that number at the time doesn't mean you can't rock the 58 and still be rocking Von Miller. But I knew there would be a lot of that. What's your take on that?
You know, you want to know, I like what you just said, that just because he changes it to 40, like, let me say it like this, using Kobe again as an example.
Oh, gosh, again?
Kobe Bryant's number 8 jersey never did and never will go out of style. Why? Because he had all-time signature moments in it. Von Miller's number 58 will never go out of style. There's only been like 8 or 10 defensive players in the history of this league that have won Super Bowl MVP. Von Miller's one of them. He's been all-pro. He's all-world player with 58. So that's never going out of style. So I think it's timeless. And if you want to buy the new 40, if he did that, perfect. If you want to keep your 58, perfect. By the way, it'd be hard to imagine Von Miller outdoing what he's already done into his 30s. Yes. So, you know.
It's a classic. I mean, it's like having a John Elway, a Peyton Manning jersey. You're always going to have those jerseys. They're always going to be awesome. They're always going to be cool. And that's just kind of, you know, Von Miller's in that category. So it doesn't matter if he changes to 40. You still got the 58 and you still rock it. And it never goes out of style.
Right. Right. Speaking of Von Miller, speaking of the Broncos defense, this past weekend, a major, major feather in that defense's cap from 2015 from Pro Football Focus. Stoke, they put out their 4 best defenses of the decade per Pro Football Focus's war, like wins above replacement. How they get to that? How they get to that?
I didn't know they had that in football. I thought that was only in baseball.
Baseball, right?
Right.
I agree with
Mike Trout's war rating is 5,952. I mean, his wins over replacement, I mean, he's the best to ever do it. It's like, what? I don't even understand the calculations here. But now they have it in football. Okay.
Yep. So, you know, Pro Football Focus, they do things their own way. But it's uniform across all the teams. So it's not like one team is judged differently than another. They looked at the entire decade, and they picked the 4 best defenses according to their PFF war. Who do you think the number one defense of the past decade was?
Well,
actually, let me say this. Before we tackle that, who comes to mind as the best defenses in the last decade?
I'd say, obviously, let's just start with the Broncos 2015 defense. And then now I got to really start thinking a little bit here. The Patriots probably on there 1 year. I don't know what year that would be. I don't know. Maybe last year's Patriots defense might be on there somewhere. one of the Steelers' defenses, maybe Ravens' defense. Oh, no, how about Seattle? Mm. Throw Seattle in there.
Mm-hmm. Legion of Boom.
Yep, throw them in there, and then go ahead. I'm just kind of scrambling right now.
That's okay. Here are the four best defenses, according to Pro Football Focus's WAR algorithm. The fourth best defense of the last decade, the 2013 Seahawks. That okay. Legion of Boom defense. They are the fourth. The third best defense in the last decade, according to Pro Football Focus's WAR, is the 2017 Jags.
Oh, yeah, they were really good. Goodness, Doug Marrone just goes for it on fourth and short. They beat the stinking Patriots. What a killer, man.
Man, that
play
was
conservative, play conservative. You get a bad call, and you lose that game, and you had it won. Oh, my goodness, forgot about them. Gosh, that defense was good.
They were the better team on that day.
Yeah.
I thought they were the better team. If you remember, this is the AFC Championship game we're talking about back in 2017. The Patriots were bailed out by a couple long pass interference spot fouls. I remember they could not move the ball on Jacksonville. And there was a couple of these downfield shots that resulted in, you know, 48-yard right. penalties and really helped out New England win that game. But that 2017 Jags defense, man, they got after you up front.
Saxonville,
that's right. They got after you up front. They had, that was A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey
yep.
as your corners. They were thumpers,
they could
man.
Run the football.
They could. They could.
Blake Bortles was a quarterback. Was it Bortles still?
Yep.
And he stunk, but he was serviceable that year. Like, he was actually serviceable, and he just needed to make a few plays, and he was making a few plays that game. And their running game was great with Fournette. I mean, they had the right recipe. And, you know, I just remember that fourth down and one, and he elected to punt it, and it was just like, dude, you don't get it. You don't get it here.
Right, right.
And, of course, what happens, you know, they go to the length of the field and score, and, you know, they end up winning.
Yeah.
The Jags lose.
Yeah. But that defense, again, you know, to be on this PFF list, it's not like you have to win a Super Bowl to qualify.
Sure.
This is a team that was right there. And then according to PFF's WAR, the second best defense in the last decade was the 2018 Chicago Bears.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about them. Oh, man. Poor Bears defense let down by the offense and the kicker.
It was a pretty similar situation between the Jags and the Bears. They were all-time defenses that they just couldn't get enough competent quarterback yeah. play. You know, they went, that Bears team went 12-4 with Mitch Trubisky. 12-4. They were like winning in spite of his lackluster play.
That was Vic Fangio's defense.
That was Vic Fangio. 36 turnovers.
Yeah.
27 interceptions for one season.
They were great.
That was a Super Bowl roster, Super Bowl defense.
Yeah, if they could have just, you know, if they would have made that field goal, what if? What would it look like? Because when you have a defense like that, you know, you got a chance in the playoffs. And,
yep.
You know, we've seen it here. I've seen it in Baltimore. And but they just, you know, the Cody Parker donk donk or whatever it's
Parky,
called.
Parky, yeah.
The double doink. And you lose that game to the Eagles. And it's what if. But certainly that defense was special.
It really was. And so that's the second best defense of the last decade, according to Pro Football Focus's WAR. But according to that same formula, the number one defense in the last decade was, in fact, the 2015 Denver Broncos. Number one.
Yeah, I mean, well-deserved. I think well-deserved. Everybody here, I think, would agree with it. Broncos country certainly would agree with it. I would also. That defense was special. I mean, you put them up with the greatest of all time. And what they're able to do and accomplish throughout that course of that year. And then, you know, the really special defenses show up in the biggest moments. And that's what that defense did. And then the playoffs, they were just spectacular. The plays they made against Pittsburgh, the plays they made against New England and Tom Brady. And then obviously, you know, the legendary performance in Super Bowl 50 against Cam Newton and that unbelievable offense that Carolina had and how they just shut them down and how they were just all over the place and just dominated that football game. And legendary performances when it mattered the most, and that was one of the greatest to ever do it, that defense.
No question about it. But you see in PFF's top three rankings anyway, each team is sort of structured the same way. that it was so incredibly defensive heavy, and the Broncos in 2015 were able to muster just enough offense to win games when it mattered most, the way that the Bears and the Jags didn't.
Yep. And, you know, you look at that team, and that really wasn't how it was set up. It just kind of how it went for the Broncos that year, with Peyton getting hurt and, you know, the offense just not being what it was a year or two before. And then all of a sudden the defense just kind of hit their stride, and I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but to take that big step to being, you know, the centerpiece of that football team, they kind of did. And it was like, wow, this defense is special. But, you know, early on, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to ride the coattails of this great defense and let's play conservative offense. It just kind of,
right.
You know, as the season went on, that became their identity. And they accepted it. They embraced it. And they thrived under it, and they figured out a way to make it work. And so that, I think that's what makes that year so special, is how they kind of adapted that style just kind of along the way there. And that defense was special.
Stoke, what some players, some NFL players are experiencing this week has been described as, quote, pure death. And you, Stoke, have firsthand knowledge of what these players are going through. Details next.
Love them. Classic ZZ Top.
Oh, okay. Boy.
The beards. Remember the beards?
Of course.
Yeah, how could you forget the beards?
This
has got to be on the greatest.
This is a sharp dressed man.
Yeah, probably so. Yep. Sounds about right. Love it.
Classic.
Yes. Okay.
What some NFL players are experiencing this week has been described as, quote, pure death. And Stoke, you have firsthand knowledge of what they're going through. I was reading this on Pro Football Talk this week. Jameson Hensley of ESPN.com explains that the Ravens' virtual off-season workouts include the team's notoriously challenging conditioning test. Quote, it is pure death, end quote. That is from former Ravens running back Justin Forsett. He said, quote, it is the hardest conditioning test I had throughout my time in the NFL. That was from Justin Forsett. By the way, Forsett played for 7 different NFL teams. The test itself, it consists of, and you got to pay attention here because this is tricky. The test consists of players running 900 yards in 6 sets, with multiple changes of direction. Each set consists of 150 yards, with players running out and back 3 times. The time limit ranges from 32 seconds to 27 seconds, with 64 seconds of rest in between each set.
So it's 25 yards. Okay, it's 25 yards back, 25 yards back, 25 yards back. And there you get your 150 yards.
So you're not like running the length of the field and then back to midfield.
Right. Nope. You go 25, boom, touch the line, go back, you know, to the goal line, go back to 25, goal line, go back to 25, finish.
For a former Ravens cornerback, Fabian Washington, he told Jameson Hensley of ESPN.com that it was about the 4th set where things start to get dicey. He says, quote, my legs were gone by then. You can't pick them up. It feels like you're running in mud. It was definitely a shock. It's literally the hardest crap ever, end quote. And it's something that the team did this year by having players place their phones on a tripod so the coaches could see them do this during this quarantine state.
You're not getting
them
out of the conditioning test. Unbelievable.
No, and they're timing them through a Zoom call.
Sure.
I mean, how about this? It sounds like the Baltimore Ravens have been doing this specific test for many years. Did you do this test?
I did do it. I have told this story before, and I'll just try to make it really quick. So when I signed with the Ravens in 2013, it was in the middle of a training camp, a couple games into preseason, and I signed there and flew in. the night before, slept, woke up, went to take my physical, doctor's office, all that stuff, passed it. I wasn't quite sure what laid ahead, what I had to do next. Well, all of a sudden they said, well, you need to pass this conditioning test. But I didn't have to do any kind of workout or run any routes or anything like that. All I had to do was pass this conditioning test. So in other workouts that I've gone to, when I went to Seattle, when I went to the Giants, and before I signed with them, I had to go through routes. They wanted to see me run some routes. Had quarterbacks out there, other receivers. Nope, not in Baltimore. I just had to pass this conditioning test, and I was going to be in. I was going to be on the team. And so I didn't prepare for this test, right, because I didn't know what it was. When you take tests like this, you need to prepare for it, because if you don't, there is nothing like it. You can't, you know, no matter how many sprints you run, the change of direction and the time that you have to get is just grueling, and you don't know how to pace yourself. That's the thing. When you do these things, you want to finish right. So if you have the 27 seconds to finish, you know, if you're on the low end there, 27, mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. want to cross the line at 26 and a half, 27, right when you're crossing the line, right? So you know how to pace yourself, because if you go too fast too early, now you're just, you're really screwing yourself there, because once you get to that fifth and sixth one, you're done. And that's what happened to me, Zach. I wasn't prepared. I didn't know how to pace myself. And, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to go out here. I'm going to dominate this thing. I was pumping myself up. Well, the first one, you know, it says 27 seconds. I came in like at 18.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
that's not a good thing in this scenario.
No, that's an awful thing. And nobody else was in this building. I was in the indoor facility. It was just me and the weight coach. That was it. And he called it out, and he's like, 18. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And it might have been 19, but it was way too fast. And all of a sudden, Ozzie Newsome walked in the door of the indoor facility. And as I was resting, I was hurting already a little bit. I said, Ozzie, rookie mistake, Ozzie. I finished too quick, and I paid the price. And I got down to the last couple, Zach, and all I thought about was them not signing me and me getting on a plane and returning home and having to look my oldest son in the eyes and say, I didn't sign. This is what I was thinking about. I didn't sign. The Ravens didn't sign me because I failed my conditioning test. And that's what I was thinking about. And I don't know how I finished, but these comments from Justin Forsett and the other players about my legs, I'm so nauseous the rest of the day. Just felt unbelievably nauseous. My legs hurt so bad. They were like jello the rest of the day. It was absolutely grueling. And John Harbaugh came up to me, and he's like, I think you can practice tonight. Because we had an outdoor practice that night.
Oh, that's right.
And at the stadium. And Ozzie Newsome had told me I wasn't going to be able to practice because they had to get the paperwork through and all this stuff. So I ended up passing the physical. And John Harbaugh said, you want to practice tonight? I think you can practice tonight. And I did not want to practice. That was the last thing I wanted to do. I had no legs. And but what was I going to say at that moment? So I'm like, yeah, sure, coach, I can't wait to practice. Thank goodness that because of the league rules and the paperwork and stuff, I wasn't able to practice. But that conditioning test, yes, grueling. Man, I never forget it. That was my thought process, though. It was, if I don't pass this, how embarrassing that was going to be. And I wasn't going to look my son in the eye and say, I didn't pass my conditioning test. So that's what got me through it.
Well, first of all, that's a great story. I always love that one. And it gives maybe new insight to Shane Ray. Because if you remember, Shane Ray was brought in by Baltimore and could not pass their conditioning test.
Yep.
And he hasn't been in the league since.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's a good memory.
You know, maybe that was part of the hang up, not getting through that specific test. The RamosLaw.com text line, very upset. Very upset when the way we started this segment. But I made a promise about the music.
Oh, yes. Yep. You know what you don't know.
If you get it,
you made the promise.
I made the promise. All right.
You're sticking to your word.
There is
a lot of people ripping my parents on the text line, RamosLaw.com text line, you know, rest their soul, thinking that the van being torched was an insurance scam.
Yeah. And if you missed that, Stokely's family had a big van when they were younger. And when he was seven or eight years old, it was stolen out of a grocery store parking lot and lit on fire. And immediately the text line accusing your family of yes. running an insurance scam to get a new car.
So I had Steven, just real quick, I had Steven send me the text of the texts that came in, and so I sent it to my two sisters, and they said they were like, oh my gosh, they didn't know mom, and my sisters, I forgot about it. They're like, I hadn't thought about that in a while, and they said, I don't think dad talked to anybody for weeks after that. So there you go.
Oh,
I didn't talk to anybody. You talk about an upset household. Oh my gosh, I'll never forget it.
Oh my goodness. All right,
torched the van.
They torched the van. All right, is the NBA season actually going to happen? The plan is in place, that's for sure, but doubt is seriously starting to creep in, and it has to do specifically with the Denver Nuggets. We'll take a dive into that conversation with someone very much in the know next. Our good buddy Matt Moore of the Action Network joins us on the Fireball Hotline. Matt, it seems like I go back and forth, not even just week by week, but day by day with my level of optimism that we are going to have NBA basketball back. And right now, if you go to ESPN.com, the number one headline is sources, Denver Nuggets closed facility because of coronavirus. Today's one of those days where I just am not feeling great about where we're at. Where are you at, Matt?
Pretty much the same spot that I've been in. I think part of this is that everyone, I think, is a little bit behind the league in their evaluation of these things in terms of the league expected to have the positive tests that they've incurred. They expected to have these things happen. That's why they're conducting the test, to make sure that everyone that enters the bubble, and that's becoming not the right word for it, but that enters the Orlando playing area, is cleared, has gotten over it, has had two negative tests. They're doing all this to ensure it. And part of it is, the players have not been in a bubble, and the players have not been, they've been, like all of us, have been exposed at various risks in their day-to-day life. And so we're seeing some of this happen. I think the bigger concern for me in terms of whether the NBA resumption will start. First off, it's really great to hear that, I heard this morning that the players are all asymptomatic, that those tests were positive, but they were asymptomatic. They are in addition to the original tests, but that everybody so far, knock on wood, is doing okay, which is great to hear. But I also think that the bigger threat for the resumption in Orlando is more going to be players opting out of the conditions, because we're still hearing those. We're going to continue to hear those for another week to 2 weeks. And that, I think, is going to put more strain than anything on the possible resumption of play.
Yeah, Matt, what's the plan from the NBA? Because we talked about with Pedro Gomez about baseball, and there was no word from him. We don't know about football. What's going to happen if all of a sudden there's a big outbreak on a team? Now you're going to try to bubble them up and do all this stuff, but stuff happens, and all of a sudden a team has four or five guys or six guys that are 8-10 guys, and all of a sudden they can't play. What's the NBA going to do in that situation?
There's not a number. So I've read the protocol that they put out. There's a 108-page manual for protocol and safety regarding the resumption. And it specifically states in there that while these procedures are in place to ensure that play progresses while keeping everybody as safe as possible, it does not account for the possibility of another suspension, a hold, or a cancellation of the event entirety. And most of that, the league is giving themselves the option in writing to be like, look, we got to keep this open. We don't know what's going to happen. We're going to do the best we can. We think that we've got the best protocol possible. But if we do have a big outbreak that is going to impact the ability of one or more teams, then that might prompt a change. And there's no word yet on whether that means, I don't know if they've built in a week to 2 weeks of extra time at the facilities in case they need it. It's going to be very tough for them. What I do feel confident is if you have a major star player, God forbid, test positive, again, with symptoms or whatever, and we've already had Nikola and others, if that happens during play, they're they're going to continue. Like, those players have to quarantine for 2 weeks, and the team's going to have to go on without him. They are treating it mostly like it will be the same thing as if the player was injured. He's not available to play. He's out. He won't be able to be around the team until he's cleared. And if that's how it goes, that's how it goes.
Man, well, I'll tell you, it sounds like you're hoping that doesn't happen, and it sounds like that plan is in place. But if it's the Western Conference Finals and Anthony Davis and LeBron James test positive for COVID, I mean, are the Lakers going to play in this huge spot without two MVP candidates? Is that representative of the Lakers? I mean, at what point is that lost and this whole thing, you kind of throw your hands up?
Yeah, I mean, I get that feeling, man. But at the same time, we got to remember the NBA Finals were played last year without Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson.
Yep.
Now, look, COVID is scarier and more serious than any of those injuries. If it becomes serious, you know, so far, knock on wood, most of the cases have been mild or asymptomatic. So there are definitely bigger concerns, but that's a whole other conversation. If we're talking about game integrity, if we're talking about competitive integrity, this isn't dissimilar from a player having an injury. They're both health issues. It's going to feel different to us because of the context in which it's occurring and because of how huge this feels in a global moment. The actual practical impacts aren't tangibly different from an injury. It's much different for the player and their health short, medium, and long term. It's much different for the league in terms of managing a health crisis. But in terms of the actual play of the integrity of the game, it's not dissimilar from an injury.
And we're visiting with Matt Moore. Matt, looking at players that have the opportunity to opt out. We saw DeAndre Jordan say, you know, he's got it. I'm done. I'm out. I know somebody from the Lakers tapped out and said they didn't want to do it.
Avery Bradley.
Yeah. Are you hearing any other names out there? And when is the deadline to say for a player to say I'm not going to go to Orlando?
So there are rumors that are definitely out, and there's nothing that I can report because it's all hearsay at this point. No player has informed me that they're opting out.
Do you think there'll be some big names?
There are going to be more names that are significant. Now, I don't know what that does in terms of how it shapes the league. Like, I don't know, is there a threshold for a player that would really shake the NBA's ability to continue? I don't know if that's the case because, you know, Patrick Beverley was the one that tweeted, look, if LeBron's playing, says we're playing.
Yeah.
And I think that probably is true, you know, and I think for the most part, and as of right now, you know, there's no expectation of any of the MVP level guys to sit out. And maybe that's the level you have to get to. But there will be major names that aren't going to play. This has gotten good. Like, one thing I picked up on really early talking to executives as this thing was headed towards a plan last month was nobody is like, no, this is going to be good. It's going to be awesome. Everything's going to be fine. Everyone's like, man, I don't know about this, but we got to do it. And that's how everyone feels that's going there, that's participating is like, this isn't great. Like, no one feels awesome about it, but it's what they feel like they need to do for the financial implications. And, you know, as a very distant second to crown a champion, the basketball is not going to be great. I worry about competitive investment from the players on some of these teams. There's a lot of things that are going to make this jagged and kind of ugly, but it's going to be sport and it's going to draw ratings. And that's the reality of it.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.